Hello and welcome to Carry On Promoting. This is the first and maybe the last podcast that we are going to do. And who is we? It's me, Simon.
And me, Giles Armstrong.
We were two small-time club promoters in Dublin in the noughties.
Yes,
Running small little clubs every Thursday.
Yeah, and the occasional big gig.
So sometimes we would lose a lot of money instead of a little money.
Yes.
I guess this podcast, we're going to go back about some of the nights we had, some of the guests we had, some of the stories. So Electric City, what was it? It was a 200 capacity club that ran every Thursday.
Every Thursday from 2003 to 2008, wasn't it? Yeah, something like 5.5, nearly 6 years. Three different venues. First of all, it was the Metropolitan, which was on Eden Quay. Then there was Traffic, which is, well, people might know it as the Twist of Pepper when it went all up Marcus. And then we ended up in Wax for a couple of years. And we also did kind of bigger shows, Electric Shock shows.
I think every venue we were in went up market
after
we left.
Being in it,
Metropolitan became a strip club.
How up market was that?
Yes.
But so we did that always for the
small club, though. I mean, it was 180 capacity in London. It was tiny.
Yet still we kind of had some of the bigger names play, I suppose, and a lot of new people plays, and a lot of local people as well, but a lot of new.
Yeah, we always wanted to bring over people who hadn't been to Dublin before, or if they had been, to get them to do a different set, like Steve Rackmatt to play electro, or Weatherall
to play disco.
DJ Rush to play disco. Yeah, that was very good. That was good. He's a big man.
He's got a big
appetite.
Who would have thought he played the Rolling Stones? But he did.
And and Rod Stewart.
And Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart, he played, yes.
Yeah, he was very good. Sexy. Yes. So, but this episode here today now is about the time we had Richie Houghton play.
Richie Houghton, it was November 2005. We'd been up and running for about three years.
So I suppose
we'd had a few big names play before then. Who would you say had been maybe? I mean, the Hacker was sort of like championship level, wasn't he? He wasn't Premier.
Wasn't Champions League.
Speedy J had played.
Speedy J, Alan Alien had played.
Had Dave Clark played?
Our first Bertie. Vitalik, I think, had played by then as well.
Vitalik had played. So he played twice in the end, did he?
So we went with the night itself. Was what we tried to do was an access all areas, because we were just in the basement each week, which was, I suppose, 200 people. It was a little bit bigger than
if we were the Metropolitan. Very lucky.
Oh no, we would never get 200 people each week, but like it would have held that had we did.
Yeah.
And upstairs for that night, we decided to go all out because we had Richie Houghton downstairs. We decided to open up upstairs as well, and it was more of a bar setting. We had Weatherall play up there, but so it was more of a bar setting at the time, really.
Yeah,
it wasn't
like,
as I say, a fancy club like it became with the Twisted Pepper. But
I mean, I think in our heads, in my head at least, these were both at the same level, which is mistake number one.
That
Houghton and Weatherall were.
But
clearly, only one of these was sort of up on stage in Ibiza with Sven Sven Veit at the time.
Weatherall, and it wasn't Weatherall.
We had
the lineup. So upstairs in the bar, we had Johnny Moy, which was probably, I don't remember booking that one, because when we started the club, it was never really about the DJs. That we grew up listening to Moy and Scurry and Francois as well, a little bit in the UFO. And I suppose they were our idols and our heroes, but it wasn't really about having those play at the club, I think. But and plus, I've always been just mega scarlet around Johnny Moy from the time I managed to blag his phone number off him one night in the Temple of Sound during the mid-90s. I think he just gave it to me to get me away from him. Like, you know, here you go. And he didn't do the normal trick that normal people do, is that where they add an extra digit. So when you go to ring it, it's like 8 or 9 digits. It's like, it's not their real number. But
this would have been a house number at the time, wasn't it?
It was a house number, because I didn't even, it was before mobiles, I didn't even have a house phone in me ma's. I remember I used to have to go to the phone box around the corner that smelled of piss and burnt plastic from people trying to set the receiver on the phone on fire. So and it didn't take money either, because it was always getting robbed. So we used to have like a card that you used to put in. So I remember going around one Tuesday night and about 10 o'clock and ringing the house, and his mom answered. I was like,
so you're talking to Johnny Moy's ma at 10 o'clock. And yeah, 10 o'clock's a bit late to be ringing somebody, isn't it? Like, I was sort of like 8 o'clock maybe.
Well, but his mom answered and I said, Johnny there, it's Jules. So I get him now, and came to the phone. And said,
Johnny Giles,
yeah. But he came to the phone and he hadn't got a fucking clue who I was. And I remember saying to him, like, oh yeah, do you remember the other night's great set? Wasn't a great set, wasn't it? I was like, yeah. Do you remember that tour tune that you played? What was the name of that? And I think at that stage you just hung the phone up, and I never really spoke to him since. So I was always a little bit scarlet around him. So
But he had always sort of booked weather off early days,
hadn't he? Yes, he did.
Gigs in the Furnace he would have had, and clubs.
Weatherall was playing over here since the year. I'm nearly sure he played at an after party for the Easter Rising in 1916. Love from O'Connell Street, you know. So I'm nearly, he was there from day one. And
he certainly dressed like that in later years.
He dressed like that, yeah. But he's been over from the year, really. And I suppose when we had him over once before, in the Metropolitan for like a micro house set, whatever that was. Minimum before, and that was like the year before. And so we'd known him from that, and it was he still came back, surprisingly enough, yeah. But this time we had him play an alternative set, which I think was the start of his kind of rockabilly phase.
He was doing
maybe
that double gone chapel stuff as too long, so okay. He was starting using his vocals a bit more.
Yeah,
and,
so is that. And then we had Alan O'Boyle play before him, and
Alan O'Boyle from Decal.
Yeah, who I've never rang his mother, so he was grand.
Alan
so,
played before as well. Did he play before Clark? He had played.
He played before Clark in the Metropolitan too.
So upstairs was just like anything goes, wasn't it? Really, it was all back to mine.
Anything goes.
It was
kind of
hoping
that it would just create a flow through the building and that people would be up there as well.
I mean, what could possibly go wrong? Downstairs you've got Horton playing, like
the
height of Villa Lobos trend, and upstairs Weatherall playing rockabilly.
Gary Glitters.
It was definitely going to be a 50-50 split.
Yeah. But downstairs we had Ross Crew from D1. He was on.
Was he D1 or Full Stop?
Full Stop, could have been Full Stop at the time as well, but he was ideal, basically. And then I was playing. Now, I want to say this from the off here. I never once enjoyed playing any of our gigs, because you're normally playing to nobody for a start, and you're just thinking of other things. You're thinking like, oh, is the sound okay? Do I have to go and pick someone from the hotel? Is there anyone actually going to come through the door? How much money are we actually going to lose tonight? So you're kind of never really giving it to your all. I think you do had the right idea when that you used to put on records at the start of the night that were 20 minutes long.
That was it, yeah.
And just
Manuel Gotching.
Stand there. And that's,
or you just tell the bouncers we're not ready to open yet. So if you could get it till about a quarter past 11, you'd be doing well.
And then it was Horton then himself who, I think, was on our radar from the very start. I was a big fan. Oh, you're not as much of a fan as I was, but I was a big fan up until kind of this time, I suppose. And he was on our radar for me. But how do you get one of the world's biggest DJs into a club the size of his living room? You know, it's not, we kind of, how has it happened? So we kind of put a plan in place. So we thought that we'd get Magda at the time. Magda would have been, when we heard stories at the time, Magda was living with him, or she was
Digitising his collection,
yeah, making his vinyl into MP3. So we think, right, we get her over, it's a great gig. The next day she's back over a bowl of Special K.
She's going to tell him,
this is great.
It's back how it used to be, remember?
You've got to go over and play it. They're
feel the energy of the crowd.
The only problem is when we had her over, the gig was absolutely shite. There was nobody there for about an hour. I think she played an empty dance floor to maybe about the last 20 minutes.
It's one of those ones when you're talking to the guests and you just have that, you don't want to let the conversation drop, because you know if anyone pauses for a minute, you're going to look around and you think this place is tumbleweed. So you're just talking about anything and everything, desperate stakes.
So Operation Magda had failed for us to get Horton over. So plan B then was to get John Aquaviva play, who would have been Horton's old partner in Plus 8 and All Pro and all these other labels. Now, he wouldn't be going back to Houghton over a bowl of Special K and cookies on a Wednesday afternoon saying, oh, what about this great club in Dublin that I played? There's a better chance of them bumping into each other in some Lufthansa airport lounge in Frankfurt and one of them's on their way to a gig in the Philippines, you know? So
yeah, there's definitely that sense of...
Yeah. But the thing was, that was a crap gig as well. So even if he didn't meet him, he wasn't going to go saying it to him. So I think the thing was, we were, you know, in fairness to Magda, she did come back and it was great. Every time she came back after that, it was always really busy. And it even got to a stage where we couldn't book her on a Saturday night because she was so busy. We could only ever get her on the Thursday night.
Yeah.
So we were just, that time she played, we were just 10 minutes too early with her. But for Aquaviva, we were fucking 10 years too late.
Yes. You know,
yeah. His time had...
You don't say you meet them on the way up or you meet them on the way down.
Yeah, so his time had passed. Sorry, I have to check the smoke machine. And then I think you did the booking, I think.
He was with an agency, Klonk at the time, in Berlin. And we had just obviously did have the roster, and it would have like Geyser and Runstock Restore. And then at the bottom, you'd see Houghton.
Yeah, don't mind the others.
And obviously, I think he was just heavily booked up. But we just used to send emails to the agents. We did sell it to them. We had a nice little email out about what the club was about. Yeah. In fact, it was small, it was Thursday.
Yeah.
I had the record shop at the time.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
We were both DJing. Yes. So there was, we were true to the scene or whatever.
I suppose.
And some agents went for that.
I think as well at the time, like you got to remember, this was Houghton that was probably at the biggest he's ever kind of was. I remember that month he was number 12 in the DJ Mag top 100 thing. Like he's up there with your Ferry Carstens and your Armin van Buren's. He was the Tiesto of techno at the time. He was up big. But also at the time where he would be playing the Red Box, which was the biggest club in town where all the superstar DJs played. And
what did that hold? About
1,500 maybe.
Is that all, is it?
Yes, maybe 15? More. I don't know. They could open up the pod and it was bigger, I suppose. And, yeah, do a proper access all areas.
We did Anthony Rodder up there at some point.
We did, actually.
With Frank Cussero.
Oh, God, right.
Christmas came early for Frank that year.
So I think... the Red Box being closed at the time, I think Houghton still kind of wanted to play in this territory and he was kind of up for doing the gig here. Now, I had played with him the previous year in the Red Box. It was one of those gigs where I don't think anyone else know that I played before him, only me, because I was just support. It was like, I wasn't on any lineup, I wasn't on any poster.
Yeah.
It was just Richie Houghton plus support and I was the support.
Were you not DJ TBC?
DJ TBC. I remember getting the call on the Wednesday before the gig. The gig was the Friday and it was like from Robbie Butler, who would have been the promoter or the booker of at the time, or was it
larger than life Robbie, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, or was it LRB, little Robbie Butler? No, I think it was BRB, big Robbie Butler at the time. So and he rang on a Wednesday afternoon going, are you doing anything on Friday night? And I was like, oh, hang on, I'll check and see who's on the Late Late Show, you know. So oh, do you want to play Richie Houghton? And before you know it, you're just thinking, panic straight away, I've only got two days to get me set together or whatever. But went off and played with him and it was kind of...
Was he hanging around? Was he in the green room?
I didn't really see him much. I remember he raised an eyebrow before. I think I played that song, the Nathan Fake, that was kind of starting to be big.
The clouds are pink, was it?
The sky is pink.
The sky is pink, yes.
And I think he...
Posh Trance.
So it was around that time, but I remember him being like, he was the kind of blonde, kind of mini Sven. It was the Sound of the Seasons, whatever.
Yeah,
it was that
kind
of
eyeshadow.
It was the first time I'd seen him where he had flunkies with him.
Right.
So he had like a guy, he's this tech guy with him, but he also a guy kind of there to look like all his only job was to pour his champagne. So this was like, you know, the beginning of the hot and phase of, you know, people fanning about on stage after him, you know, that you'd see it where he's playing these gigs in Time Warp where there's 50 people on stage with him. It's like more bumps than the fucking road to Connemara, you know. It's like
VVIP.
Yeah, VVIP. Yes. So this was the Music Institute of this. This was the start of him fanning about on stage, so
right.
With people behind him. So that was my only kind of close up with him before.
Did you see him in the Temple of Sound back in the 90s?
No, I missed that one.
You missed that,
no,
yeah.
No,
I think that might have been the first time he played.
Yeah, missed him in the Temples. Yeah, though I think the first time he played was Masnade Women, actually, in the system.
Is that the first time?
Yeah, yeah. That was the first. And I was at that. But yeah, that was a proper Thursday night club, wasn't it? One of the best ones, I suppose. Juan Atkins and
speaking of the Temple Theatre, I seen him. It was him and Aquaviva played there.
There you go. Yeah.
And I remember getting home after the gig, and it was the night Princess Diana died.
Seems to me you lived your life like a candle in the wind.
Aquaviva played upstairs, and I think Haunton played downstairs. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's
all a bit shaky.
Yes. Well, one of the, I think, the most asked questions by other promoters or people that always basically was like about the night was like, how much did you pay for Richie Haunton? That seemed to be it.
It was a big, but clubs changed. You know, so I remember when I started going out, you'd be there and I'd be thinking to Pan, goes, geez, what was that record he played there? What was that tune he played at the end of the night? And then, so it got to some point where everyone who came into the club was a fucking promoter. It's like, the only person, all they'd ask you is like, how are you doing tonight, lads?
Yeah, how's it
doing? Do you reckon you'll get the numbers in?
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you're out here. You've just paid a tenner in. Go onto the dance floor.
And
fuck
enjoy yourself
off.
And don't worry about how many more people we need to break even.
Yeah,
just
the last thing I
want to
do is look
yourself
at the spreadsheet again and see all the minus figures.
Yeah. It was loads for Haunton, though, wasn't there? It was just loads of people's ass. And I always used to say to them, like, who said we paid them? You know, who said we paid them?
Yeah.
So maybe if this podcast takes off and we have some sort of Patreon further down the line, we can tell them.
Maybe a little only fans.
But it was a kind of take. Okay. But listen, it wasn't much because...
Look,
nobody ever played for money.
That's one of the things we always said to the agents. Come back and say, you know, what can you offer for Richie? It's kind of like, look, it holds 200 people.
Yeah.
The most we can charge you is...
Exactly, yeah.
And do the maths.
Yeah.
Like, if he doesn't need the money.
No.
You know, if he wants to do
it. In fairness, we used to have, like, Liebing played the Thursday Club, Ellen Aylin played. We had a few of them played the Thursday Club that we then had play on a Saturday night gig, and they got the big bucks then.
Later on,
yes. Yeah, they did, absolutely did. Do you know what I mean? So it was good that we saw they'd come first and they'd play for feck all.
Mm.
But then, you know, when they were a bit bigger or whatever, we would put them on at the Saturday night and they'd be getting fucking 20 times maybe what we were paying them.
Yeah,
in some cases, do you
it's
know?
Not about money, because there's no way you can compete. You could go off to Ibiza and do something on the tourist date and probably get.
Yeah, but I think it stood to us a little bit that we were a good for the UK. We were a good starting point. So we'd also many a time we'd have people coming and we might be doing a flight share with Fabric or Archers on the Glasgow on the Friday night, and they'd be going to London then, and it'd be a little mini UK and Ireland tour for them for the weekends.
Yeah.
So that kind of always stood.
There wasn't loads on in the tours. I remember looking at the magazines at the time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see much else happening.
It was a busy month that month for us. I think we had Alternate play the week before at a Prodigy after party
thing. That's right, yeah. Doing Old School, we had the Dust Masks.
Did we have an Alan Terrell play the week before that, or David Coretta, somebody maybe. I know the first Thursday of the month, I remember well because my second daughter was born that day. That's how I remember it. And I did miss the night, and it was Oscar Malero. But I was glad I missed it because there was nobody there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was absolutely nobody there.
Just
to
let know, you didn't miss the night of when your first daughter was
born. No, I didn't miss that night.
Clearly, you had a discussion with your wife.
Yeah, I had my priorities
night.
Straight, but we needed a babysitter, didn't we, the second time? So I was, as much as I tried to get someone else to do it, I just, couldn't wing it. So, but yeah, Malero was shit, I remember, at the start of that month. So, but you're kind of, when you have people that kind of do come every week, you want them to be there when the big name kind of comes.
Yes.
And sometimes we had people there that night that were never at Electric City.
No, that might have been the only time they were
there. They might have been the only time that we're there because Haunton was there, do you know what I mean, and they'd travel or whatever, and that's sometimes a little bit, you're hoping that nobody was that comes every week or comes was missing out because some lads after coming from At Loan.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean it's naturally a different buzz because you do get a lot of strangers in on those nights, and it changed the atmosphere a little bit because, listen, what are you going to do? That's what it's
Well, so the day itself, like, there's a, I think when you're doing the gigs as well, and I'm sure there are people that do gigs, it's all consuming, isn't it? It's like, it's all the time you're thinking of it. You're thinking of booking, there's emails, there's promotion, there's hotels to be booked, there's flights to be booked. It's non-stop.
Especially when it's weekly. I mean, yeah, we're mental when I think back of it now.
Like, I could never even have time to sit down and watch a TV show at night time when I was doing the club. Because it was just, because we worked as well, I kind of worked a day job through most of it and never kind of went full time with it. It's just like, it's all the time, and you could be up till 11, 12 o'clock every night doing stuff.
And you know, apart from the nights where we sold tickets, which wasn't many of them, you just didn't know who's coming down because there was no Facebook.
Like, yeah, no, so no.
You couldn't even send out invites and say who's coming. It was.
Actually, we didn't even think the internet was going to last. Started up, it was going to be a phase.
Was there MySpace? Did you set up a MySpace?
We had a bit of a MySpace page. I think we got a website further down the line.
I don't think it was anything more than a URL.
Yeah, basically a few things. Yeah, it was nothing special. I think emails was our main thing, and a few forums.
Yes.
We did send out emails every week, and a lot of people kind of hung out on forums then days.
That's right.
That was the kind of Facebook of the day a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah,
you would have done the forums, I remember.
Yeah, the forums thing. But the day itself, there was a lot of airport runs. So first of all, I remember there was a guy, Patrick, he would have been Houghton's tech guy. So I remember having to go out and pick him up at about 11, early that morning.
What was Houghton using at the time? Was he?
Oh, I think he had his own mixer with him. Yeah, so if whatever his Fancy Allen Heat mixer was. And he came, your man came, Patrick came, and he set the stuff up in the club, and he was able to, like, you know, hook up Houghton's electric toothbrush into the Bluetooth that's going to be in Houghton's toes, that's going to go to the whoosh pedal, you know, so he can have his hands free so he can tweet out what feckin' songs he's playing, you know. So, but he came early and set up, and that was grand. Hung out with him for a little bit in the afternoon, and then it was back out to pick up weather. And I remember the day being pissy. It was horrible. The weather was horrible. It was November, it was cold, and Weatherall, he was great. We had met him before and it was grand. But sometimes Weatherall, he could be just a bit quiet, he could be a bit moody, you know, and it just, like, he had a bit of a humour on him. And that day I couldn't really get much out of him. Like, and it was, I remember coming back into town, and rush hour was around 5 o'clock, and the traffic on Dorset Street, it felt like I was 3 days stuck on Dorset Street. It was pissing rain, and I was like, I'd given up kind of talking to Weatherall at that stage, because it was like building a break in snooker. I was kind of thinking three questions ahead each time, and I was just getting nothing back. So I was just letting be. So I kind of was glad to kind of get him to the hotel, and then it was back out to pick Houghton. Houghton wasn't in till late. So this was it. This was me big chance. It was just me and the idol, me and the hero in the car together. And it's like, right, what am I going to say to him here? And
he's
like,
trapped.
So yeah, he's trapped. This is my chance. Do you know what I mean? I can drive him into town via fucking Drogheda, you know, and this, I'm going to nail him to that wall.
He's getting it.
Right, so what?
Every plus eight record you've ever bought, where you bought it,
where
you put it in a mix.
Yeah, what was that kick drum you used on Substance Abuse? You know, it was like, what about the first time you played in Dublin? Do you remember? It was like, oh, I was there. It was the first time I heard a Purpose Maker. It was in Marzi's Woman on Thursday night. It was brilliant. What about that time you played in the Ambassador in, like, Top of O'Connor Street, where you, like, the first time I heard Speedy J's Point Blank? When he played in Mosny that time, or what about the time I heard him in Ibiza, where there was three fellas on the podium behind me from Mayo with, like, a tricolour wrote on it, "Have you got any mitzies, Richie?" You know, do you remember that? So I had all these things in my head, and he was a few minutes late, and I picked him up, and he got into the car, and he was cold. He had a big bubble jacket on him, and I remember him turning the heat on himself, so he's in turning these. So I was like, okay, so we're coming out of the airport. I was like, okay, what am I going to go with? I'm going to nab him here now. Next of all, the fucking phone, his phone rings. Some minimal numpty bumpty talking about some loop he was after making him, and how Houghton was going to play it for the next fucking 6 hours or something. So it was just, the moment had gone. So I never really got to say anything to him at all.
Did you not know? Might have been for the best. I think you
probably was.
You both might have dodged a bullet on that one.
They made it to the club, you know. But we got him into the hotel.
You were staying in the Morrison, wasn't he?
He stayed in the Morrison.
Yeah.
We got him into, I think that's where the Micra came in. So, because I was driving a Mitsubishi Space Star at the time, and I had him in that, but then I had to go and play, and I fucking hated playing, but we'll go into that in a minute. But I think that's when you must have meant to pick him up in the Micra.
I mean, it's only about 200 metres away, but
yeah,
probably,
but we didn't. I don't think he walked, you know, as much
Wouldn't want to carry all those cables.
Yeah, well, he had his guy to do that, but yeah, you had the Micra, which was It was a great little car, but at the time, if I remember, there was a few things not working in it.
Few things not working.
I think the heating was on all the time, is that right? Or the cold air was definitely on all the time. Was there a window broke as well? It was
November. There was an issue with the electrics. Yeah. Let's just say there wasn't much income coming in from Electric City to get the car serviced.
He did. He did get into the club. I suppose then the night itself.
I think we brought. I must have brought him in, but it was. It was empty upstairs. I was starting to get worried because people come in and the bouncer's going, yeah, man, like loads of people are in tickets. I'm like, where is everyone? And he's like, they're all downstairs. And we were looking around upstairs. Upstairs probably holds about 200 as well, and there was maybe about 10 people.
And they're all Weatherall's
average mates. Age of about 48.
Yeah, and Weatherall was there playing Gary Glitter to his mates. Well, dressed like he flew over on his own Spitfire.
He did. look good.
Hey, the Wright brothers have called Andrew. They want their trousers back. So it was like, yeah, and that was it. There was no flow. There was no kind of buzz. And I should have just let Ross play on because he was playing great. I remember getting on a little bit later and I remember seeing Houghton, you bringing Houghton down the back stairs and across Stanford, and he couldn't actually get through the crowd.
Oh, stop.
It was so fucking packed.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was thinking,
I've had it easier getting through the South Terrace on Lansdowne.
It was like Dahlia in the 70s or 60s. It was like, and it was scary. It was like, listen, we could have done time over that if something went wrong, really. We could have been put porridge for both of us.
I know.
And we were lucky that
we were opening
didn't
back
really.
Doors to let air fly through.
Yeah. I even let a record run out at one stage because I kind of caught him and I seen him stuck in the crowd and I was like, oh fucking, next far I know it, fucking, there's no music at all. I was like, oh shit,
nobody any move to dance, like we're three or four deep, but you see pictures of it, lads are just standing there just looking at him.
It was a pretty male crowd as well.
There was a lot of early Plastic Man sort of haircuts going on there. They hadn't sort of got the blonde sort of style in place.
So I suppose we were lucky, and then he did get on, and the sound went, didn't it? Or the speakers down the back.
I think I avoided it, to be honest. I just did not want to deal with it whatsoever. So I was one of the five people upstairs for pretty much all the night. And the bouncers would come over and go, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to stop people going downstairs? Saying, just, I'll leave it up to you. You're more familiar with that.
No, I definitely think the sound.
The sound went at some stage.
Because I remember when it came back, the place went mad. It was
right.
Like
you sure it wasn't a mix? Like that was par for the course back then, wasn't it? Drop it out for a few minutes.
10 minutes and
kick drum comes back.
Yeah, it definitely had gone and it came back. Tunes wise, I didn't hear too much of that. That's the worst about doing these gigs. You don't really hear much of them because you're running around checking stuff in the door. You can't actually ever sit down and listen to the DJ or listen to who you have playing or enjoy it as such.
He did
hear him play that Lemonade tune at one stage, which is the
Dutch your own Verhoeven, is it? Is that?
It might have been re-released on Plus 8 around that time or something, and maybe reissued.
Yes, I think you're right.
So I do remember him playing that and putting it through the whoosh whoosh pedal, and I must say, whoosh whoosh, great. Yeah, it was woo. So
if you look at what Minus were releasing that year, I mean, they had stuff like Run Stop Restore. Yeah. Matthew Johnson's big one was out, I think, that year.
Yes.
DJ Minx.
Yeah.
Slack Noise. Right. Geyser.
Yeah,
Heartthrob. False was Matthew Dear. He was big at the time.
They had a release.
They were lashing them out of it in 2005. Like it was a big year to get him for that sound. It was at its peak. I think
they'd more releases than Mountjoy Prison. it was constant, wasn't it? It was like
he did
every week.
DE9 Transitions.
Okay, yeah.
And
I know. Listen, he the glasses were gone. The hair was grown. It was blonde, but he wasn't gone like full Elon Musk. I don't think yet. You know, it was. Yeah, he was gone shy, basically.
it wasn't
the proper techno. That was ditched now. And
that transitions thing was, I suppose, it was technically interesting, with all the knitting all the different snippets of tracks together and stuff. But you know, it's look, I was never a big fan of him either, to be honest. All that Plastic Man Sheet One stuff, man, it fucking bored me to tears. Yeah, apart from maybe.
Yeah. And
Cybersonic stuff and Helicopter Spastics. Yeah, some of the remixes were great.
Yeah, yeah. Never.
Robot Man. And I remember now when I'm saying them out loud. But that sound wasn't for me. I don't think I was doing the right drugs at the time. I think it was a ketamine sort of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, wasn't it? Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's ketamine or heroin, maybe.
I felt like doing heroin afterwards, you know. Well, I suppose the night went. People did enjoy it, didn't they? I suppose.
I think so. A few people complained that it was a bit busy.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is fair enough.
Because I think the flow, people kind of got a little bit scared maybe of downstairs, and they did move eventually upstairs and just chilled out.
Yeah.
So upstairs did dry kind of got busier. Yeah, yeah, as a little bit. But I suppose then, what was the aftermath of it then? I remember saying it to Houghton because I didn't see him the next day. Did you bring him back to the airport?
I brought him back. Yeah, it was him on his own. So I had the mic again. It was November.
Yes, and the window was down.
The window wouldn't shut. So I picked him up from the Morrison. You said he turned on the heat in your car the day before, and I was thinking, fuck man, he can't even close the window here. So I was bringing him out to the airport, and again, you know, you're in that kind of like it's obvious here the window's broken and stuff. I was going, it's minus 60 in Dublin.
Yeah, he didn't get it.
Didn't get the joke, no.
No, a lot of them didn't get our humour. I don't think the Americans
spell it out to them.
Yeah, yeah. But we always had too late. Trouble with them. Yeah, over you the can't. Head. Yeah, totally over the head.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They didn't.
No buzz. John Tushar.
They didn't get the. Yeah, there was none of them. Yeah, a few of them were just. Yeah, yeah. Remember meeting him after and saying it to him. Oh, that was great. Yeah, the usual show. Oh, great, great, great. We must do it again someday.
Yeah,
and
I remember sign here.
I remember him looking at me as if I had 10 heads gone. You have absolutely no hope, mate, of me ever playing at your club ever again. I don't care how much money you offer me. Like, you are not, it's not going to happen. It's like, I think at that stage, he knew he was had, didn't he?
He had nowhere to move. He was surrounded on three sides by just about lads five deep.
Yeah, and there was no, he was up in the red box where he was away from, or he was up on the stage. He was hounded at the end of it. People were photos, people were like I know
there was no space in the boot for people to get in and mince around
there was none of that. But I do I heard a story since of a, I won't name names, but of a Dublin promoter who's gone on to do bigger and better things than we've ever done, and he told me that he booked Houghton on the basically he got a photo of Houghton at the gig,
okay,
and then sent it to the agent 10 years later or whatever, and said, listen, can we recreate this again? I'd like to have him play at the club I'm running now. And as far as I know, it's going to happen. So
that should have been a black mark against him. Once he sees that picture, no fucking way.
But no, it works for him. So something good came from the night. But I remember going home. I have two girls, and one of them was about two and a bit at the time, and the other one was just born, so she was only a couple of weeks old. And I remember getting home and one of them was getting up because it was probably late getting up, so you don't get to sleep really, don't you? For me, I didn't. I used to come home and before you know it, you'd have the kids would be up and you're fucking end up staying up most of the day with them. Yeah, and so I remember coming in and I don't know which club it was, but I remember her having the dirtiest, biggest, filthiest nappy I've ever seen. And I was saying to myself, I just had Richie Houghton play in the club no more than 2 hours ago, and surely I should be off at some after party somewhere, you know, enjoying the fruits of having Richie Houghton play.
Yes.
But here I am, head to toe in poo.
I don't think we ever did after parties much, did we? Not really.
And because it was a Thursday as well, most Fridays I was in work, so I was coming home and going to work like a zombie 4 hours later. And it was kind of tough going. You'd be hanging for the day, you know. So I don't know what's left to say then about with the.
No, I mean we did book a lot more people from Minus afterwards.
Oh, we did.
It's not like we dirtied our bib completely.
And they all did well. I think it was just the time, wasn't it? It was Troy Pierce's was busy. It was busy for Mark Houllet.
He was very nice. I liked him. He was funny.
Heartthrob and
Matthew Dear.
Yeah, Matthew Dear. Matthew
Johnson, only one T in his Matthew.
Matthew Johnson. Yeah, we had loads of them play and it went well, but never.
Never Houghton again. I don't know, did we ever try for him again?
I don't think we did. Oh, we did once, actually. I remember we offered him absolutely silly money to play on a bank holiday Sunday in the Tivoli once.
Okay.
I'm talking 20 grand or or something like mad, where we would have needed to fill the whole place just to like lose a grand. You know, just to fucking have him play, you know. And they said he didn't do it. He didn't want to do it. I think because he was playing the Fabric on the Saturday, it was we were looking for something for the right. Sunday to do it.
Might have been off to the chalet, to the chateau afterwards, yes, maybe just yeah. to... For his wine vineyard, or his,
what's that Japanese thing he drinks? Is it the sake? Yeah, he could have been in a sake testing session with somebody from Roland.
He's last I saw of him, he's doing something with Prada.
Making
the music
I saw that. Virtual.
Is it making the music for their clothes?
Yes, for their shows, their show team, whatever, their fashion shows.
Yes,
their awesome.
Adam Driver is the model, and Lady Gaga.
And Lady Gaga.
That's the level he's at now,
Haunton.
That's the level he's at. So I feel we gave him a bit of a springboard to go up to the next level. He knew if he didn't up his game, he'd be back playing our fucking shitty club.
And doing the music for pennies. We're pre-mark. But I don't know, what would you say, like, we kind of, I look back at the night and think, okay, this should have been the best night ever. And I'm sure you're getting to meet the main man at the time, and it's just, this is the dream, isn't it? Like, you're running a night, you're having Haunton play, it doesn't get any better than this, really. And I'd look back at the night and go, oh, what a load of shite.
It was stressful. It was crap for him downstairs because it was too busy. It was crap upstairs for Wetherall because it was too empty.
And I was
totally stressed out
because
of people were coming up going, it's too busy down there. You have to do something about it. And I was like, I tell you what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to go out to Dan's car. I'm going to spark a joint.
Have a look in the green bag.
I'm going to forget about it.
I'm
certainly not going to deal
just
with it.
Just for those people, just the green bag, it was the bag that we used to have for putting all our leads and our flyers and our bits and bobs in. And we must have had about 3 or 4 different green bags over the whole time, but we'd lose it all the time. Or I think you'd have it and be left at the side of the street.
No matter who had it, neither of us had a clue what was in it.
Half inch
female.
We hadn't a clue when it came to the technical side of things either, sure.
No.
I thought the difference between a 007 and a 707. It's like we hadn't the fucking foggiest. I know a little bit more now, but Jesus, I've got 20, 15 years later.
I don't look back on it with any fondness or anything.
Of what should have been the best night of our promoting lives in a way.
I think whatever little money we made probably just went to cover what we lost on Malero at the start
of the month.
The week before was more crack.
We had a good one to alternate. We had masks and we got lucky sometimes, didn't we? We just had... was it Massive Attack one night played in the Metropolitan and we had Carl Finlow play after it. So sometimes you'd get these big gigs in the O2 or the Point Depot at the time and they happen to be Thursday nights and you just
fool yourself into thinking that Finlow had a big following.
And then you'd end up booking him again as Silicon Sally or
Random
Factor.
Yeah.
Maybe nobody there. It was like back down to reality with him. But that was one of those nights where we'd better crack actually for alternate eight or Bumbles eight as we called them. That was good. But listen, back to Haunton, what would you, if you were to mark it out at 10 on the break evenometer, would you? I think it's struggled to get fucking 5 in my book now.
It was good to get him because he was probably one of the biggest we ever booked, especially the time we booked them at. It was in that sense you felt sort of right, that's a bit of vindication that the club is doing something decent, even if the night itself was a fucking nightmare.
Maybe
a 5, and that 5 just because of sticking it on your CV, a bit of ego,
I don't think did we use it to kind of go and get anyone bigger than him? We probably didn't. There was no one, was nobody bigger unless we were going for a fucking
Sven.
Sven was even lower on him on the list, on the DJ Mag list at the time, but
he's a bigger personality, isn't he, Sven? Sven,
he's king of the fees, isn't it?
I think Harlequin, the ballet dancer player.
I remember there was a time we had Johannes Heil play, and it was in the Temple Bar Music Centre, which is now the Button Factory, and we were so enthusiastic about, we're going to get Sven to play here, we've offered Sven here, and Johannes Hall just looked at us and said, in this little club? And we were like, what do you mean? Like, after offering him like 10 grand, and we never even got a reply off the agent,
He heard what happened when we brought Alter Ego over to play.
Yeah.
That's another story. We can do one on the Frankfurt scene.
Yeah, God, yeah, but... And it's true though, he was one that got away, even though we did try.
We would have asked, we got, because we did take a few people from Cocoon.
Yeah, with the...
We did the old same strategy.
The same strategy, yeah. Operation Frank Lober.
Yeah.
But that didn't
Andre Galuzzi.
Andre Galuzzi, yeah.
Did you get Paul Britschitschitschitsch?
No, we never got as far as a taxi, no. Taxi for Britschitschitschitsch.
Didn't they? They did they did a minus...
They did actually, they did. As well at one stage, yeah.
Taxi for Sven.
Taxi for Sven, yeah.
Should have got a taxi for Richie instead of sticking him in the micro.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, it must have been for him, and like he's used to getting picked up in Jags and Mercs and just. It must have been a bit of a culture shock for him as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I don't think we cared though, because I mean, there's no point picking him up on America and we're after paying him what we paid him. We might have thought that the micro, I mean,
at least it's a leveler, isn't it? It's
genuine, like, these guys genuinely don't have a pot to piss in. Yeah. This man can't even roll up his window in the car.
I'm going to an office eating.
So I think there was a bit of sympathy there. We did break even.
Yeah, I actually probably even up a little bit of money, I'd say. But yeah, we didn't, but that was, I suppose, as a... But we never did it for the money anyway. It was always like, you know, just to...
What was the thing? We don't do it for the money, but we don't have the money to lose.
Either, yeah.
That was one of our trademarks, that I'd sign off an agent's email with.
Break even on it, you know, so...
I don't know who we did then. What did we do? It was coming up to Christmas. Who did we have after that to...
Well, we used to do our residence night at Christmas, didn't we? Always, me and you used to play.
Yeah.
And then some other times, the other residents, when they were involved, they used to do it. But, so I think that's...
That's
the story of Horton in the micro.
Horton in the micro.
So, so listen, thanks for listening, if you've lasted this long.
Yeah, fair play. If you want more of this ramblings of small-time amateur promoters
carry on.
Middle-ranking Frankfurt DJs. More of those amazing stories. This is the podcast for you.
Yes, yeah. So you never know. We might be back with another one in a... Who knows, Sven? But,
Who knows, Sven?
Who knows, Sven? Yeah, who knows, Sven? So, thanks for listening. Yeah, we'll see you guys.
Bye-bye. Okay.